You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today I'm joined once again by my good buddy and educated on a lot of hunting gear and equipment, Mr. Bob Polanic. Let's see here. Me and Bob, we go way back. When I seen, I don't even know the first time I met him, but we actually met. He went to the ATA show with me. We used to do this podcast fairly regularly with each other. And so anytime I want a BS session, I call up Bob. And on this episode, we talk about getting ready for the upcoming season, shooting our bows. Matthews recently had an issue with some of their limbs. And he has the brand new lift bow. And now, you know, we have this discussion about whether or not we are comfortable and confident in our equipment. And with these limb issues that have been happening, he's kind of lost, like, there's no issues with his bow, quote unquote, yet, right? So in a week or so, he's getting ready to go on an early season elk hunt. And this is something in the back of his head that he talks about today. And so we talk about that. We talk about boots. We talk about what to do when you start to get chafed out in the wilderness, along with a whole bunch of other hunting gear and equipment type conversations. And of course, it is fall. So we kick off the episode by me talking trash on Michigan. And he doesn't really need to talk trash on Iowa because there's no way Iowa's beating Michigan. But with that said, it's our favorite time of year for a reason, deer hunting and college football. And so we have a conversation about that as well. But before we get into today's episode, I do have to do a shout out here. Code Blue Sense, huge shout out to Code Blue Sense. If you're looking for real or synthetic deer urines, do me a huge favor. Go to codebluesense.com, enter the discount code NFC20, and you're going to be able to get 20% off of your purchase. On top of the real and synthetic deer urines, they have mock scrape kits. They have scent elimination products like sprays and laundry detergents. So it's a one-stop shop for all your scent needs or scent elimination needs. CodeBlueSense.com. Next on the list is the Feed Hub. For several of you, for many of you, you live in states where it is legal to use feeders during the season or outside of the season or a combination of both. And so it's always good to know if your feeder is operating the way that you want it. And Feed Hub kind of solves all those problems. Basically what Feed Hub does is it is a device that connects to your SpinCast feeder, and it allows you to control your feeding times, check and monitor your feed levels, run an unclog cycle along with several other benefits. And the best place to go check out the Feed Hub is MoultrieMobile.com and check out the Feed Hub. You can run that device through the Moultrie Mobile app along with all of your other Moultrie Mobile, I guess you would say Moultrie Mobile cell cams. So it's a awesome benefit to those who live far away from their feeders and can't check them on a regular basis. Go check out the Feed Hub. Last but not least, when it comes to trail cameras right now, you know, I'll be honest, I'm kind of sitting in a dead period right now. Not a ton of deer movement, but I think a lot of that has to do with the beans being ripe right now, and a lot of deer are in the ag fields, especially where I'm at. Or maybe they're cruising, looking for oak trees that are starting to drop, things like that. But with that said, I've been running Reveal trail cameras by Tacticam this year. And I'll tell you this, The ease of use is spectacular. Scan a QR code, click a couple buttons within the Reveal app, and your trail camera is ready to go. I mean, there's no entering codes. It's just a scan, click, click, and you're ready to go. And so I'm really looking forward to the rut here, or the as the velvet comes off, seeing the movement pick up, and then watching the deer on my property. So if you're looking for a cell cam, an easy to use cell cam that is has a ton of functionality, go check out tacticam.com/cameras and check out the new 3.0 versions of the Reveal. Outside of that, we're good to go. Go check out my company, fullsneakgear.com, and let's get into today's BS session. All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast. Today, I am joined by my very confused friend, Bob Polanek. He seems to think that it's cool to be a Michigan fan. I somehow disagree.
I never said it was cool. I was raised a Michigan fan from the time I was in a high chair. It's in my blood. Did I go there? No.
No.
But
it doesn't matter where you went.
Right. I agree.
It's just the fact, like, I'll take this. I'll say this, though, about Michigan fans. Anytime Michigan has come to Iowa in the past and played us, and I've been to a game or in the area, Michigan fans are somewhat cool, right? There's always a little bit of this, like, oh, I'm Iowa, you're Michigan, blah, 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 whatever. But I think we can both agree that Ohio State fans are some of the biggest D-bags that I've ever met.
Personally. They are, and I think I think they're kind of delusional, and I think it's comical that they have lost 3 in a row to us. So, yeah. I mean, we've been on the opposite side of that for way, way too long. So we still have a lot of ground to make up. But I don't know, dude. I'll be honest. Michigan fans, they can be pretty arrogant, pretty stuck up, especially the alumni.
Yeah.
So, but then you got a lot of state fans throughout this term, Walmart Wolverine, and it's like, dude, if you could only root for a college team because you were an alumni, college football would not be what it is today. Mm-hmm. It needs fans that didn't go to the college.
Oh
right?
Yeah.
So.
Oh yeah. It's we're coming up on my favorite time of year for a reason. It's my two favorite things. Hunting and college football, period.
Yeah.
And my brother, he likes to watch pro games a lot because he's made a good point. It's college football just faster. Basically it's the best of the best of the best. But there's something about the tradition of, let's say, watching Michigan, Ohio State play, or Alabama, Auburn, or Iowa, Iowa State, you know, like the rivalries and things like that. And then at the same time, like, I just like watching good coached football. Like, I forget his name. Dabo Sweeney out of Clemson, and the guy from Oklahoma State. What's his name?
Is that Mike Gundy, or is that
the guy who has the mullet? I can't believe I forget his name because I love him. I love the coach.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Anyway, so
yeah.
And then, you know, of course, Iowa fan. And so we have been living in the Western Division and being good by default, if you must ask, getting to having our record be where it's at. We've got a new offensive coordinator this year. I'm pretty jacked about that.
Your offense can only be better.
Exactly. So we got that. And then, but here's the issue. We get a new offensive coordinator. We're thinking, okay, let's do this. Now guess who's coming to the Big Ten? Oregon.
Right.
Washington, UCLA, USC, and now it's going to get ugly. I think we play Washington here this year at Iowa. And
You should be fine. I don't think Washington's going to be – they lost half their team and they lost their coach. So
Yeah. Anyway, they're still – I mean, it's still going to be a good team. Who do you guys play any of those new teams this year?
Oh yeah, dude. Well, first of all, our second game is a non-conference game. We have Texas. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be brutal. And then we've got our fourth game. We've got USC. We've got Oregon. We're at Washington. I don't think we play UCLA. But we don't play Penn State this year. Obviously we play Ohio State. So yeah, we've got USC, Oregon, Washington, and then Texas. So we've got a hard schedule, but I think we got a pretty good ball club coming back. And then does Cade McNamara still there? I know he got hurt last year. He was Michigan's quarterback a couple years ago that won the Big Ten. And
I think he's still here. I think you're right. He did get hurt, and I honestly haven't been able to keep up with it. Usually what happens is the day of the first game, I get all caught up, like read all the posts and the boards and like look at the roster and things like that. So all I know is it's a joke now, is that we had the cornerback, our Iowa cornerback that was a stud, go pro, right?
Yeah.
And now we have another starting white quarterback. And so it's funny, like the joke around college football is that Iowa is now not only like a defensive powerhouse, you know, that keeps teams somewhat close and always holds them under their average yards per game and things like that, but now we're feeding the NFL white cornerbacks.
Yeah,
which has been kind of a joke. So, I don't know. I found that kind of funny.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway,
college football. Anyway, it's my favorite time of year.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing better than going to a morning hunt, getting up, getting out, watching a good football game or part of it, and then going back out for the rest of the day after that. Right. Nothing better, dude. Bowl of chili, you know, smoked meats or whatever. I don't know. I just get fired up about
that. We're a week away, man. A week away.
Yep, I know.
Yeah.
It's also that time of year where, dude, I have seen some absolutely ridiculous pieces of hunting product hit the market this year. Have you seen the mock rub kit?
No.
It has scent on it, but it's like a piece of fabric or a blanket.
Yes, I have.
Wrapped around a tree.
I have seen that. Yep. Why?
I just don't get it. Like, I understand why. I understand. Some guy has an idea. Hey, this deer maybe saw, maybe smelled this scent post of a rub, and now I need to bring one into the tree or into my property with me in order to somehow get deer closer to me. And I just, like, until I see it work, I would be very, very, very skeptical of any product like that.
Well, what happens when a mature buck goes and tries to touch that up and it rips off the tree, and now you just, and then he carries it 100 yards, now you just have a piece of fabric laying in the woods on your property?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I just, like, there's certain products like that that the older I get, like, I used to be all, I mean, to be honest with you, I was a skeptic of Ozonix and ozone. Now I'm a huge fan of how ozone works, not necessarily out in the woods per se, but how I treat my clothing with it.
Yeah.
Afterwards, I do still bring an Ozonix in the tree with me, but, like, I was skeptic at first, and then I was like, oh, okay, this is awesome. Like, I used to do mock scrapes a little bit, but now, you know, I use preorbital gel and trail camera, like a kit. And, dude, I've had really good success with those. So maybe it's something that I just, before I talk trash on it, I just need to, but I just don't see it. Like, I could possibly see, okay, you know, preorbital gel on a mock, like with a mock scrape. I could possibly see something like ozone. Science tells me that, but this, man, just seems a bit ridiculous.
It's a visual thing. Why don't you just go up to a tree with a saw and just make your own rub?
Yeah.
Spend 60 seconds doing that, and you could probably scar up a tree pretty good and make it look like a rub.
Yep. I know guys who used to do that with a piece of metal, a flat piece of metal, and then they would cut a wedge in like a stick or like a, I don't know, about 2 or 3 inch branch. And then they would go up to this tree and they would rub it raw, Yeah. And then I guess you could also do some preorbital gel on that as well.
That would make way more sense than strapping a piece of fabric. I mean, also, that's like basically free.
Yeah.
And you're not buying, I don't know. It's kind of a, I get some of it. Mox grapes, I'm a fan. I like to use vines for them. I don't really use any scents on those, and I've had good luck with deer just hitting them naturally. The ozonics, I'm still skeptical of it, but I still use it. It definitely works on clothes. Like, I'll go elk hunting, and I'll sweat out my t-shirt day after day after day, where every evening I take it off and it stinks, and I'll throw it in a tote, run the ozonics on it, pop, I throw it on in the morning, and it has zero odor, which is just, I've done it to boots that just stink to high hell. It deodorizes those. As far as using it actually in the tree, I still bring it. I've definitely seen it work, and I've seen deer like completely disregard my scent. I've seen deer definitely smell like the ozonics, but like they don't associate it with a threat or a predator. Mm-hmm. And I've seen deer just absolutely wig out from it and go the other way. So, but the wig out thing has only happened like one or two times, and who knows, maybe I had absolute dog breath that morning, and it was just too much for the ozonics to overpower, you know. So let's be honest.
Oh, Bob Palahniuk and his halitosis.
Dude, well, you get deep into the rut and you're drinking beers every night and coffee in the morning, and you can get
not
some,
brushing your teeth, obviously.
Well, I think you still can. You can have some tough mornings out there, you know.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I don't know, man. It's just, I just care less the more I get into this. You know what I mean? Like, I don't even, like, my scent. My access routes are the thing here. Like, I'm always locked tight on my access routes. But when I'm in the tree, and if my wind's right, like, dude, I don't shower every day during the rut, or definitely on a western hunt, right?
Oh, no, you can't.
I mean, I'm just being – I don't care necessarily. I like camo. I like camo in certain scenarios, but I'm also a solid color kind of guy as well. And so – I just feel like, man, like the older I get and the more I get into this, once you're in there and you get this woodsmanship and you have as many experiences as we have had, you learn like what works for you, right?
Yeah.
And I heard something the other day. I'm not going to say who said it. I'm not going to say what it's in regards to, but there's people out there who like they feel that. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Price reflects quality. And I, in a way, I agree with that. However, there are people who spend that money in order to feel confident whether or not the product works or not, right? Does that make sense?
It does. I kind of, to back up a little bit, I think the caring less thing, I think that's an age thing and an experience thing. Because I no longer give a damn what anyone thinks of me or what I kill or whatever.
Yeah.
As far as I would say there is something to be said that I don't say it's always a one for one, price reflects quality, but I do prefer to buy quality gear, camo. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if I'm comfortable and warm, I'm going to last longer. And if my gear, for whatever reason, does make me more confident, confidence is, you can't measure what that's worth on a hunt, but if you are confident while you're hunting, you hunt better. If you are in a tree and you have no confidence, you are not engaged the same as if you have 100% confidence. And I don't know how you measure that, but you're just mentally locked in more if you're hunting with confidence. And if gear or a set of binos or your bow or whatever adds to that confidence, then I think it's worth it in some aspect. So, I mean, it still comes down to the guy at full draw. If he can execute the shot, if you don't execute the shot, you can take all that confidence you just had and throw it out the window. So,
yeah, they say, they've always said, and we've talked about it here, maybe we're beating a dead horse, maybe we're not, but they've always said, if you're thinking about your gear, then you don't have full faith in it, right? My boots when I'm out west, I know I have a good pair of boots I'm not thinking about my feet.
Yep.
Or my pack is on right. Or, yeah, my legs are going to get tired, but that doesn't mean shit. That's not my gear's fault. Right. But, if I'm somewhat warm or I'm somewhat cool, depending on whatever scenario I'm in, if I'm not thinking about that, that is the best. That's the best. It tells you your gear is working. Mm-hmm. And even on the weapon side of things, it's like, okay, I've practiced enough, so my equipment is on point. I just now need to execute the shot. And so again, you're not thinking about did I do everything? Because a weapon standpoint, like a bow, a firearm, things like that, that's on you. That's not any of the fault of the product, like camo would be, or like layering systems or things like that, or a boot strap breaks, or something like that goes wrong. However, the weapon is, I look at a weapon, I'm like, dude, if something goes wrong, it's your fault.
Yeah, dude, I got one for you on the weapon front. I have the new Matthews Lift, and I don't know if you're a part of like Matthews groups or anything like that on Facebook, but
I saw an email come out from McPherson.
Dude, so I've been watching I got mine back in May. I've been watching all summer, well, probably since June, all these limb splinters and stuff like that. And like every day I shoot my bow, I'm looking at it and I'm just waiting for one of my limbs to splinter. And I'm going elk hunting in a week, and it's like that's not cool to have. I'm just shooting it with like whatever. If it does splinter while I'm out there, I have read from enough guys on Facebook that their limbs have splintered and they've still shot like 75 to 100 arrows through it with no issues. There's not limb failure, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like splintering and it's still accurate and tuned and all that. So like if one of my limbs splinters while I'm on a hunt, it's probably going to mess with me mentally, but I'm probably just going to try to overcome that and still just try to execute my shot. So
that whole scenario,
terrifying.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. Have you ever had a bow explode on you?
No.
So I have, right. And a lot of it had to do with me being a dumbass. Okay. I'm not sure if I forgot to put an arrow in or not. Hmm. And then I drew back and I was using a thumb release and I was new to it, and it slipped out of my hand while I was drawing it back, and the bow exploded, and it's scary as shit. I had the release bounce off the bow, come back and hit me in the face, and I had to go see if I needed stitches.
Damn.
So I didn't need stitches. Luckily they were able to glue it. But what I'm getting at is like that happened to Bowtech. I don't know if you remember that a long time ago. Do you remember back when Bowtech had all those limb issues?
I feel like, was that like a solid decade ago?
Probably. I'm guessing somewhere around 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And it really impacted. From the outside looking in, I feel like it really impacted their brand a lot.
Yeah.
And now they're starting to recover. Because I love Bowtech bows. I have one now. I've had them in the past. But Matthews seems like they're the cream of the crop right? They're the top of the mountain. And I feel like there's enough people out there where they're going to be okay from this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it will make you question the next time you go purchase a bow. I feel like, do I want a Matthews or do I want to maybe go look at something else?
I think for the rest of this year, I think it's going to deter a lot of people from buying that bow specifically. Yeah. I think Matthews has made it where it doesn't matter if you buy a used lift a year or two down the road, forever, that Matthews lift, doesn't matter if you're the original owner or not, those limbs will always be warrantied no matter what. Yeah. Because of the issue, which is a solid move on Matthew's part. Because originally, Matthew's is the warranty is only for the original owner, and it's not transferable. So,
yeah. I'm trying to look here. It seems to be cracked limbs. Matthew's lift limbs cracked in less than a month. Yeah. And then,
you guys are getting a second set or third set put on their bow, and those are cracking.
Yeah. So what is their warranty? They're just being fully replaced?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And so then they just continue to be replaced until...
Well, they identified... It sounds like they identified the issue. There was... I don't know if it was their source material or something like that was going on. So I think they... I don't know. They look at, like, the serial number and, like, a period of time. They've kind of tracked down, like, the bows that have the issue. And they did say that there still are bare bows on the shelf at archery shops, like, in circulation that have the faulty limbs on them. But it sounds like, you know, I think your bow shop might charge you, like, a labor fee. But other than that, the limbs are covered. So,
yeah. Well, at least they're trying to do the right thing here. But, I don't know. I would hear that. I just wouldn't even want to deal with it.
No, I'm totally annoyed that's what's going on. And the bow's great. I love the bow. For $1,400 for a bare bow, though, that's kind of
Gee, mini Christmas, dude.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't even make me want to go bow shopping anymore because of the price. So I'm going on 3 years or 4 years with my bow, with my Bowtech. And I just put new strings on it last year, so I'm good to go there. I was, at the beginning of the year, I was looking for a bow really hard. And then all of a sudden I just stopped because I'm like, Jesus, man, everything in life is so expensive now.
Yeah.
And I didn't, like, dude, my daughter we're going to be paying $300 a month for her to do dance. My son, it's $500 a pop for each son. Not a month, but the fee to do that. And then, like, Jesus, just
dude,
life, man.
Yeah, I was listening to your podcast a week ago or whatever, how you went to the state fair, and you spent $500 in a day, and I was like...
Dude, it's stupid.
Wow.
It's stupid.
Wow.
I don't know if it was necessarily that much, but I will say that it cost, like, $65 or $70 to get in. And then now you're talking every drink, like if you wanted a lemonade or a corn dog is like $8 and shit like that. And then if you want to do rides, I mean, I watched my kids go through $130 in about 30 minutes or less.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, holy shit, dude. And so just that on top of all of the other, you know, rising costs and everything has kind of led me to stay with where I'm at and just continue to, and I love my bow where it's at right now. Eventually I want to go get a new bow at some point. But I like where I'm at right now. I got the arrows that I want. I got the broadheads that I want. I got the, you know, fletchings, the arrows, the rest, the sight. I got all that tuned. So now all I have to do is just continue to shoot right now. And so just ramp up the shooting. So, man, it would be hard. It would be hard to, like, have a once-in-a-lifetime elk pull up on you, and you draw back, and it makes a noise that you've never heard it make before.
Yeah. No, that's – terrified that that's going to happen. But if it
do
does –
Do you have a backup bow?
I do, but I'm not bringing it with me.
Why not, dude? That's the best time to bring it with you.
I understand that. But I'm going early season elk hunting.
Yeah.
And I don't have a place to put that bow that it's not going to get insanely hot in my car. You know what I mean? And I'm very aware that you leave a bow in a car and it's sunny out and it gets up to 100 degrees in your car and your bow's sitting in there baking, you're just asking for that one to delaminate and those limbs to be faulty.
Yeah, maybe over the course of several days.
Yeah, so, I don't know.
I don't know.
So, but
you
again,
have a topper on your truck?
Yeah, I've got a Tahoe, so it's
Tahoe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, SUV. Yeah.
All right.
So yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I've read from several guys that they've still put several arrows through it with splintered limbs, and it's been fine. So I'm just and Matthew's even said there is no limb fail, like complete limb failure. Like there's no limbs snapping.
Yeah.
They're just splintering, and it looks like it's, I don't know if it's just the finish or what, but yeah, no, it's not good. So yeah, we'll see. I've got a solid 1,000 arrows through it, and there's a lot of guys that are on those Facebook pages or Archery Talk that are like, I've had mine since November or since February or whatever, and I've got 1,000 or 5,000 arrows through it, no issues. So
yeah, yeah. Maybe it was maybe they can identify it being a specific run.
Limbs. I think they have. So
all right,
I should probably reach out to them and say, hey, this is my serial number. Do you know are my limbs going to break or not? So
yeah. Hey, it wouldn't be that. That might even be, you know, taking the time to email their customer service with those VIN numbers and just being like, hey, listen, I'm looking for peace of mind here.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So you're getting ready to go on an elk hunt in a week. Do you have I know from talking with you that you have a list of products that you use every single year. Do you have any new products that you're bringing out west with you this year?
Just my pack, and it's really not even that new. So I've been running the Mystery Ranch Metcalf for probably, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years.
Yep.
They came out with some new ones. They've got like a Metcalf 50, 75, and I don't know, there's another one. I went with the Metcalf 50 just because it's like a full pound lighter. Mm-hmm. And I do a lot of day hunting. My wife and I are planning on going in for like a 3 or 4 nighter. And I'll probably use my bigger Metcalf for that. But while I'm day hunting, I'll probably use the Metcalf 50 that I have. I've been backpack training with that thing. And I've got a bunch of weight in it right now. But it just... it's that Metcalf 70 or the original Metcalf. I forget how big it is, but it does pack. It does cinch down nice into a day pack once you get in. But the 50, it packs down even smaller. Like I said, it is like a full pound lighter, and a pound doesn't seem like a lot, but you do 10 miles a day and you can shave a pound off here and there. It all ends up adding up. So
yeah. And so, what boots are you running this year?
Same boots? Yeah, Crispy Summit 2s. I've been running those for a few years. Probably 7, 8 years as well. Big fan of those. They last me 4 or 5 years. And it's not like they even fall apart. It's just, I think over time, going through whatever prickers, because I use them like on scouting trips and whitetail hunting, stuff like that. So I think walking through like a lot of prickers and stuff like that, especially in the summertime when I'm doing scouting, you can just get like pinholes in that Gore-Tex lining. So they kind of lose a little bit of their waterproofness, but it takes a good 3, 4, 5 years for that to happen. So I'm on my second set in like probably 8 years, and they're still doing just fine.
Yeah.
So they're nice. They're light and they're not insulated. So
I ended up going, like, I have a pair of Crispy Thors that I've had for my first pair of Crispy Thors I've had for a very long time. I think it was like 5 years. And then I bought another pair of the exact same boot. Those lasted me the same amount of time. But so for me, I had some waterproofing issues. Over time, all that wears off. And so I took waterproofing spray. Waterproofing spray, sprayed, you know, cleaned my boots, let them dry, then sprayed that on. And it seemed to work for the first year. But then the second year that I did that, did the same thing, cleaned them off, let them dry, sprayed the waterproofing on. It didn't seem to work the next couple times that I did it. And so I feel like it was just time. And so then I went to my third pair of Crispy boots, and I think they might be the Summit 2s as well. They have a stiffer sole.
It's like middle of the road. Yeah. Summit 2s do, yeah.
Yeah, maybe it was either that or I had the Colorado.
Okay.
It's one of those two. Anyway, they have stiffer soles, and you can definitely feel it, the stiffness on your feet. And so I'll be doing for the next, like leading up to my first hunt, you know, going into October in South Dakota, I'm going to be doing a lot of backpack training as well, and hiking, and just basically doing a daily 3-mile walk to get my legs situated, my feet, my boots. Not my boots already broke in because I had them last year, but I'm talking about like getting my feet ready.
Yeah.
And I did, like, that's one thing that I learned from a buddy of mine who hikes a lot, is getting your feet ready, not necessarily breaking in your boots per se, because that is important, but your feet. And so he's been reading on some hikers, and they just go on walks with no shoes on.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So basically it toughens up your feet, right? And so they just walk on, you know, they'll go for walks out on their road, or not necessarily gravel road, but like their street, and they'll just go on a mile walk barefoot.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So you talked about sweating through your t-shirts or whatever. What are you running, merino base layers?
Typically, if it's hot, like, it's, you know, early September, it can be a high of 80 in Idaho where I'm hunting. And I'll wear the synthetic just because it dries out way faster. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, like I said, especially if I'm day hunting, I'll hit it with ozone every night after the hunt. If I'm going to go pack in for 3-4 days, I'll leave that synthetic top, and I will wear a merino base layer the whole time. Yeah. And that doesn't have nearly as much odor.
Yeah. So I will say this, the merino base layers do an excellent job of wicking away the moisture, right? And doing the whole odor thing. Like I had a pair of First Light base layers, the top that I had, and it was awesome. It eventually just wore out, like around the right here, it started getting real thin, and it was just because I had it a long time. And now I run synthetics for my early season hunts for one reason, and it's pretty cool what synthetics do. They keep you cool, but they also keep you dry. And unlike merino, which kind of holds the heat in, it's supposed to, but the merinos that I have used in the past have been the really thin ones, so it's more about wicking moisture than it has been about retaining heat, because I don't use it as a true base layer. I'm just using it as a long t-shirt, basically.
Yep.
And so, but the synthetics, I do the same thing with just the synthetics, and it kind of keeps you cool as well. Now, when I go into the deer hunting season and it's cooler out, then I will use it as a traditional base layer. And I like a merino woolly, not necessarily a true synthetic at that point. So,
yep. I'm about the same. Yeah. Once temps are up, well, once I get into whitetail season, it's pretty always a merino base layer. So yeah.
Yeah.
And I still ozonics everything after every hunt. So,
yeah. Okay. This is a weird question, but I was walking up here today, and on my steps is a pair of Dude wipes. Okay. And so what Dude wipes are Dude wipes are a biodegradable, basically a baby wipes that it's been, I guess, marketed towards men to use or whatever. And so I use those out in the backcountry, or when I'm out, you know, even in my truck, time to go number two, whip those babies out, dig a little hole, take a poop, wipe your butt, throw the stuff down in there, and over time they dissolve and they're biodegradable. Do you have any special products that you use for potty time?
Oh yeah, dude wipes and a roll of teepee. Yeah, you can't backcountry hunt, man. You cannot get the butt cheek chafe. You just can't. Yeah. It can't happen. And like when I start backcountry hunting, like the diet kind of goes down the window. Like it's not like I'm eating junk food, but like you're eating dehydrated meals. You're eating just a lot of processed shit that's not going to spoil in your backpack. You know what I mean? And like. Mm-hmm. That does not keep me personally regular. There's a lot of fiber that food's lacking. Yep. And it's key to keep the cheeks clean, and because you get pretty sweaty and whatnot, and you get any sort of ass cheek chafe, you are you're in trouble, especially trying to do 6, 8, 10 miles a day, whatever it might be. So
do you bring Vaseline with you or a lubricant?
No.
I'll tell you this. I did have that. So I was in South Dakota a couple years ago, and I had a jar of Vaseline that I keep in my travel kit. And then I took a Ziploc baggie, kind of turned it inside out, scooped a little bit in. And then when I went out, I had some in my pack. And it saved me. It saved me from having to go back to my truck because I just made a little wipey wipe there and, you know, had some, like, it's because I had to.
Probably start moving a little faster, all lube.
Oh, yeah. I was going from that penguin walk to feeling like a sprinter after that. I was like, oh, man, I'm lubed up. Yeah. And then obviously that stuff holds in the moisture. Like when you put Vaseline on a burn, they tell you to do that so the moisture stays in, like a sunburn, the moisture stays in your skin. And and then it also helps, you know, like you lay down, you sleep. I always just bring a pair of sleep shorts. Like I don't wear my tight underwear. I let everything air out, right? So I basically bring a pair of gym shorts with me.
Got it.
So, but I will say this. You were talking about processed food and what you're putting in your pack and bringing along with you. Man, it may not be convenient for it's not very packable, and they're not really they're going to get warm, but they're not necessarily going to rot. Dude, I bring an apple with me every single day.
Okay.
Out there. And so even the time where I went out and I think it was like 4 nights I was out in a tent in a spike camp. I brought 4 apples with me, and they were not, you know, you had to be careful with them so they didn't bruise and stuff like that. But I would eat that at the end of the night or at the beginning of the morning, or that one a day. And it helps, man. It helps keep you flowing. Right.
Yeah.
If you catch my drift.
Oh yeah, for sure. Oh yeah. I deal with severe constipation when I get out there.
That's why I do this.
Yeah. First 4 or 5 days, I don't even like have like a murmur of like a shit going on. And where I've like learned like over the last decade that like I don't even really need to bring that many dude wipes or that much toilet paper because I'm probably not going to go for the first few days that I'm out there. So
I feel uncomfortable when I do that. Like I feel slow and gross.
I'm typically burning enough calories where I don't feel full or anything like that. So I'm pretty used to it. And then, so I will eat pretty decently healthy the first few days, because the first few days, usually day hunt, check a bunch of different trailheads, and then come up with a game plan of where we want to go and to try to find elk, and then go in for 3-4 days. Yeah. And then once I go in for 3-4 days, that's when I'm packing all my dehydrated meals and stuff like that. But when I'm car camping, like at the trailheads and stuff like that, I've got cooler and typically eating, you know, like chicken and lettuce wraps and stuff like that, and making like decent food. Definitely have, you know, having some fruit and stuff like that. But once I go pack in, it's all just about the lightest weight food, you know, highest calorie to ounce I can get and stuff like that. So, and it's 3 or 4 days of kind of eating not the best, and it doesn't it doesn't jam me up too bad. So
yeah. Do you ever, whenever you go out and spike, I know some guys who have done this, they basically just bring a sleeping bag and they sleep right on the dirt and they don't have a tent or anything like that. You've never done that?
The closest I've done to that is I brought a tarp that, like, the only way you keep it up is with your trekking poles. Mm-hmm. And then we brought Tyvek, like a sheet of Tyvek to lay on. And then I had a very thin sleeping pad. It wasn't even inflatable. It was just one of those thin, like, Therm-a-Rest ones. And then, then a sleeping bag. That was, like, the most minimalist way I've ever gone about it. I also had only brought in, like, 2,200 calories per day. And I'm about 225 and 2,200 calories a day and doing 10 miles a day. It was not enough food. That was my first elk hunt I ever did. I went absolute minimalist. It's how my buddy did it. It got me into elk hunting. I think in 5 days I lost like 12 pounds.
Oh yeah.
It was bad. I was also 10 years younger, so I was able to kind of just like muscle through it.
Yeah.
But nowadays I bring about 3,500 calories a day. And I don't lose any weight when I'm elk hunting. I elk hunted for 3 weeks last year, and I didn't lose. I mean, I got a little trimmed up, but I didn't lose any weight. So
I'll tell you this: I think it was the second elk hunt I went on, and it was a true, like, started at 10,000 feet, went to 11 in Colorado. There was one day, two days. I lost 14 pounds in 2 days.
Oh, wow.
And I was drinking so much water, I could not keep up with it.
Wow.
I couldn't keep up. I spent the night in at lower elevation. Then the next day, like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I can't drive all the way to a mountain and then start hiking. My body has to acclimate. Because if it doesn't, I'll get a headache and I'm fucked for the whole the whole week. So I have to acclimate now. And then I acclimated for over 24 hours, drove up to the cabin that we were staying in at 10,000. And then the next morning hiked up. So before we started doing really any hard physical, like hiking, I had just under 48 hours in Colorado, which helped out dramatically. But on my way up, I got a headache. I started drinking some water. It went away. And then from that point on, it was just about lungs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it was just the altitude, but I was in pretty good shape, but I was still, dude, I was dropping weight. Like it was nothing. Like it was just every day I had to cinch my pants tighter and tighter and tighter. My gut was going away. You know what I mean? And all that in 2 days just blows my mind.
That is crazy. I don't hunt that high. I'm more at like 7,000 to 8,000 feet. And but dude, 10,000 feet, that air is thin. I've gotten up to 995, and it's like, ooh, that's a little different. So, but I've learned enough over the years. Like first hunt or two, I'm taking it easy. That's why like the first couple days of hunting, we're just camping at a trailhead and we're just doing some of the low elevation, flatter ground, get the body used to it, stuff like that. I mean, we're training pretty good right now and kind of have the training system pretty dialed from doing this for 10 years. But I've got some good spots in some low country that there's been some historical wallows on that I'm going to hang some tree stands on this year. And so we might do some like, you know, in the morning, go up in the mountains and get that experience, check some things out. But if we ever get, you know, to have a big morning or something like that, we'll come out and then go pop in a tree stand for an evening and just conserve energy, just listen to your body, really. It's not, again, it's not one of those things where I'm trying to make it harder than it needs to be.
Like I just kind of... I want to kill an elk and I want to kill a high country mule deer at some point in my life. Those days, it's almost like every season that dream gets further and further away because it is so far away for me. And at the same time, that elevation, man, holy shit. Mm-hmm. When you live at like 1,000 feet all year long, maybe even less than that. And then you try to go hunt in eight. Like, out in South Dakota, I believe the highest I've hunted in South Dakota is, like, anywhere from 3 to 5. And it's not necessarily noticeable
right there.
But right, you start getting above 7,
yep,
then I can feel it, yep, right? And so, I don't know, man. I just don't know. I wish I'd lived in that environment. And that way, it's just normal for a person like that. So I'm jealous of those guys who are out there in it all the time.
Yeah. I need about 3 days. We get there. We probably start off about 6,800, 7,000. I need about 3 days of that. Now, whatever. We'll get up to 76, 78, 8,000. But it'll take our time doing that. And especially going out early season, it's not like full rut fest, right? It's not. You might get some bulls bugling in the morning if it's a nice cold morning, or they're just kind of checking things out, feeling their oats. But it's pretty slow going the first few days of season, and the days are long, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a big down, I mean, from 11 to 4, there's just nothing going on in the middle of the day. So I'm normally just laying on the ground napping.
And that's the thing about early season hunting. I tell you what, with that said, whenever I go out west, right, that's why binoculars are so important out in the prairie states where I hunt. You can hunt all day long.
Yeah.
Hopping ridges, glassing. And that's where, like, the boots and the optics are so important. So, any final touches that you need to do as far as gear is concerned before you're 100% ready?
Oh, yeah. I've got to fletch a bunch of arrows. I have been messing with arrows and fletchings and stuff like that. I finally got that dialed in, and I've just got like a dozen arrows that I got to finally make up, because I decided on fletching and stuff like that I'm doing. Other than that...
Do you ever put angle in your fletchings or just straight?
Yeah, they've got like what is that fletching jig?
But it allows you to go like 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, I think I've got a 2.5 degree helical on them. And I used to shoot like a 4 fletch, and they were lower profile. Now I went to 3 fletch and a little bit bigger vein, and just getting a little bit better, easier to tune with fixed blade broadheads. I had some issues with my old bow. I just could not get fixed blade broadheads to fly out of that thing right. I tried like hell, I can do some on my own, but I would bring it to the archery shop, paper tune. I would, you know, a fixed 2-blade broadhead, I could not get to fly right out of my bow. And I even tried, I don't know if it's just me. I tried with this new Matthews lift as well with a fixed 2-blade. I still can't get them to, they're better, but I still can't get them to fly right. But I throw a fixed 3-blade on an arrow and it shoots just like my field points. So
how many grains is your broadhead?
125.
Okay. And what brand is it?
The 2-blade are the Iron Wills. The 3-blade are the QAD Exodus.
Okay. And so then how many fletchings do you run on the back end?
3.
Okay.
Yeah. My old bow, I was running 4. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I'm getting better. I'm good now. So,
oh, you're good. Okay.
Yeah. I'm good now. Yeah. I just, for whatever reason, those 2 blades, I could not get to tune. So, and I'm shooting about 285 feet per second. So I don't know if it's a speed thing. And like that 2-blade is just, and it's a solid blade. I don't shoot the vented, because the vented would just like whistle through the air.
Oh, dude. I used to shoot, like back in the day, an open broadhead.
Yeah.
I cannot believe. So I shoot the Wasp Jackhammer. Okay. It's a 3-blade expandable, and that's quiet.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, you shoot a vented broadhead, and like from the bow, it may not sound like anything. So I had my buddy shoot my bow and towards the target, and you can hear it coming. Mm-hmm. And it's not crazy, like on a really windy, rustly day. And if they're close, there's no reaction time to it. But if it's coming at 60 yards, or yeah. something like that. Dude, yep. you can definitely hear it.
Yeah, they're not jumping the string. They're ducking the freaking whistling arrow coming at them.
Yeah, yeah. exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, all right, dude, that's enough BS for today, man. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day. Dude, I'm jacked for you. Hopefully you connect on an elk here in a couple weeks or shit.
Yeah.
One week, it sounds like.
Yeah, opening day is August 30th, and we're going to be there for it. So,
looking hope you have some good weather.
Yeah. Yeah, I think right now, kind of get that 15-day forecast out there. It's looking pretty decent. I wish it was going to be a little cooler, looking like highs in low 70s and overnight lows like down like low 40s. So should be awesome. All right. And I've got pretty good knowledge of the area. So
cool, man.
We'll see.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, dude. Well, hey, good luck. Did your wife get a tag too?
Yep. Yep. We're both going for the first week, and then she's going to fly home after the first week. Then I'm going to hunt for about 5 days on my own and then come home. So, I've got some Nebraska tags too, and their season opens September 1st. So if I tag out early, I'll start heading back home, but I'll stop in Nebraska, jump in a tree, and try to connect there. So.
Awesome, man.
Yeah.
Good luck, and we'll talk to you later, man.
Thanks, man.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.